We must not allow the external craziness to stop us, nor should we make one another false promises. Look, I've been a part of this congregation on and off over 19 years now. And I might cry. Yes, there it is. And this is my last sermon in my current role as your assistant minister. So I want to get this across to you in no uncertain terms.
The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
Time for my sermon, huh? I think I'm coming down with the flu. Can somebody fill in for me? Okay. You know, I failed to mention my dear Mary Gans, who will be coming along too as a new to you or renewed to you assistant minister for pastoral care. In September, or maybe a little sooner, I don't know, but I know you will welcome her. Many of you know her, and I'm grateful that she will be here among you. So, a couple of weeks ago, Mary and I had to fly to Colorado for a family visit. We'd been up and out the door at 4 a.m., and I, for one, could only think of getting to sleep. With no input from social media and the news, no bad news or bad news jokes to interrupt me, I would get situated, if not comfortable, and close my eyes. If reality is made up of our agreed-upon hallucinations, well, I'm not liking a big chunk of what we've agreed upon. And I need rest from it now and then. So I look for the beauty in the world, reason to praise in the midst of the unthinkable. It's not a betrayal to let joy in, you know. I look for the wonder, the exquisite in my environment and in you. And yes, sometimes I take pleasure in little escapes, in daydreams, and sleep. So buckled into my window seat on board, I started to drift. The plane seemed to be gliding in slow motion over a scene that resembled maybe the Arctic or some other remote winterland, maybe Greenland. Yes, it was Greenland. The jet landed with something like pontoons instead of wheels on the mile-thick ice, and all of us happily deplaned in childlike delight to play in the snow and walk on the frozen surface. Here we stepped onto the crunch of surface ice in flip-flops and t-shirts, but were immune to the sub-zero temperatures, and we each walked steady, step by step, unimpeded by the cold, the wind, the bright reflection of sunlight. Then there was a jolt as the ice pack started to disappear, and I and everyone else, we dropped in a vertical fall through the thick layer of not ice pack, but clouds, like an imitation Magritte, each person one by one going down at different rates, like raindrops or hailstones or massive rocks dropping toward Earth. We would have fallen so hard, we would have been obliterated, but we weren't panicked at all, as if we were playing a game of chutes and ladders. We would have been crushed, but for the giant nets set up to catch us by the generous people of the city of Tuck. Or was it the city of Lesso? Somehow, they knew we were coming. They wouldn't be able to see us till we reached them, because in Greenland, as everybody knows, the fog can be so low and thick, you can barely see a short distance in front of you for literally weeks at a time, sometimes longer. But they trusted their nets. They trusted beyond what they could see. My oddly bumpy landing in a giant net turned out to be the very real thump of the jet's tires on the runway in Denver. I woke up, and I wondered, Greenland? Why was I dreaming about Greenland? Did you know that in the 1970s, Greenland had the lowest per capita suicide rate in the world? But since the 90s, the rate has increased, and now suicide rates, mostly among youth and young adults, are the highest per capita in the world. I blame the internet, the increasing ability to access the news, the visuals, the consumerism in places so far out of reach that might be enticing, but not attainable. I imagine it might lead to a kind of hopelessness, what with access limited not just by cost, but by weather. The climate change we experience is more, in more subtle ways as yet, are more pronounced there, making, I suppose, the prospect of a future that is unimaginable. There is no place on Earth where there isn't individual and community trauma. There just isn't someplace else. It's a small world, and it always has been, except for our illusions to the contrary. The internet has taken care of that, and climate change is taking care of that. And out of control, the sky's the limit, capitalism is taking care of that. Surrender to the weight of being healed. It's the name of this sermon, and I imagine you're wondering what I meant by it. I can't recall where I heard or read that phrase. Surrender is a term I learned to embrace in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't like the idea. It didn't sit well with me. But it came to mean something life-saving. Sometimes you have to face up to a no-win situation and just let go of the struggle. My struggle trying to use alcohol as an escape route, I now understand as an expression of my longing for belonging, for acceptance, for self-acceptance, for coming to terms with my life. You might say alcoholic drinking seemed to offer a promise of transformation, because in the moment, drinking changed my conscious awareness. And I couldn't bear my conscious awareness or the push against it from my unconscious stuff much of the time. It's a weighty thing to be healed, even to begin the process of healing, because when you start to get it that you need to heal, you know that something needs to change inside you. It's a weighty thing, because then you become responsible. You're responsible for your own life and your own choices, and you're responsible to be a good member of the world community, too. The opposite of love, said Elie Wiesel, is not hate, it's indifference. As we begin to heal from our own pain, our own trauma, we make room inside ourselves. We have to put indifference aside and opt to care and act for things that truly matter. We're called to respond to what is and not to an illusion. You don't want to live a flyover life, if you ever did. Not anymore. Dr. King said, in the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends, and to be the best friends we can be, not just watching from the sidelines, voyeurs into other people's pain. We have to start with that inside job, getting our own stuff together bit by bit, and lead not with being nice and having good intentions, but with compassion and conviction, a place from which we cannot begin to act if we haven't done the work and built a there. Rochelle honored us by sharing her personal experience of the traumas of racism, her understanding of that part of her inheritance and her own day-to-day experience of it. We can't hear stories of people's lives, of her life, and not want to uproot racism in every aspect of her life, of all of our lives, whatever our racial identities. We know Rochelle, and we hurt because we know what she says is her true experience, and we want to end the onslaught. Trauma has psychological, physiological, and perhaps genetic impact too. Targets and perpetrators, collaborators, active or silent, or observers, all experience trauma in this cycle, consciously or not, and in different measure, to be sure. I'm not trying to compare them. To do the right thing, we each need to dig deep and build a strong foundation. How many times have you heard African-American friends say they were going to join this group or that church, or this church for that matter, but when they went, they realized, those white people have their own work to do before I'm going to join. And they're right. We who are white people have ongoing work to do. It doesn't end. Nobody escapes trauma. Personal experiences growing up, as young adults, as older adults, as members of a community, as citizens of a nation gone berserk, and a world of both enormous beauty and awful suffering, too. None of us escapes it. None of us is free. We are fond of saying, we Unitarian Universalists, that in our faith tradition, we're not asked to leave our brains at the door. But do we ask one another implicitly to leave the deepest pain in our hearts at the door? In other words, do we pay enough attention to the task of healing, beginning with ourselves and one another? Without inner change, there can be no outer change. Without collective change, no change matters. Understanding that part of our capacity to make change outside that is actually generative comes from having done work inside, so we can actually have empowerment that doesn't have to do with external conditions. That doesn't have to do with external conditions. These are the wise words of Buddhist teacher Reverend Angel Kyodo William Sensei. If we are focusing on racism, then white people We have work to do. And as Williams teaches, undoing the messages and damage caused by internalized racism is the work of African Americans. These can be concurrent endeavors. God knows we cannot delay the work inside ourselves and the work beyond our doors. We must not allow the external craziness to stop us, nor should we make one another false promises. Look, I've been a part of this congregation on and off over 19 years now. I might cry. Yes, there it is. And this is my last sermon in my current role as your assistant minister. So I want to get this across to you in no uncertain terms. This place, it is a lifeboat, a real, a genuine lifeboat, and has been for so many people for many decades. And this congregation wants to be a lifeboat for people of color. And if you do, there's a lot of work to do that white people in this congregation most especially need to do. And for that matter, we all need to do to set a true welcome table for everyone, really. The thing about a congregation, a religious community being a lifeboat, is that once you cross the threshold and come in the door and take your place, you're at least point A on the path to healing yourself and the world. And you've crossed that threshold, all of you. And now that you've done that, it's like kind of like a job description, but better, it's in a religious context, the commitments in covenant, the commitments that we need to make to live out our mission. Your work on uncovering and healing your own trauma and pain. You support others to do the same with acceptance and kindness and love. You work to undo injustice here and out there. You welcome aboard the next person and the next and the next. And other commitments as become necessary. But you see, the great wonder of a loving religious home is that unlike those little lifeboats folded up in some airplane compartment, or the ones dangling along the sides of tourist ships, as we in religious community help others to come into this lifeboat, as we help people in this lifeboat, it expands. It gets bigger. It makes more room, not less. Not less. More. And that's a fact. I've laid out for you a model for making progress toward true transformation. So don't minimize or wish to shut the door on your history, your family's history, your congregation's, your own trauma and pain, or that of the person next to or across from you, but embrace them all as keys to help you get further along toward that place you long to be. In true alliance for the good forces of change. Liberation begins with self-discovery, self-acceptance, and healing. We cannot sing the praises of the good, the beautiful in this life, nor face its evils full on without it. If you have come here to help me, you are wasting your time. But if you have come because your liberation is bound up with mine, then let us work together, says Maori activist Lilla Watson. That's been said from this pulpit many times, and I hope it continues to be said over and over. It's so important to understand that mutuality. Take a look, if you will, at the cover of your order of service. Yeah. What do you see? I see a photograph of a person washing off a newborn. It's a scene of generations. They aren't out camping for fun. They aren't out camping for fun in that tent there. They're in a refugee camp with terrible living conditions. It is humankind's inhumanity on the edges of this frame, and at its best, it is in part, the great joy and love of life that we experience in the moment a new one is born. In the birth of one more child, one more hope, one more savior, life calls us on. May this little one find the food of beauty and love to nourish it on its way. May we each and all pursue healing for ourselves, for others, and for our world. May it begin with you, and you, and you. May it begin with each and every one. Praise that. And amen.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of the First Unitarian Universalist Society of San Francisco Sunday Morning Worship Service. For more information or downloads of previous audio services, go to uusf.org. While you're there, check out our monthly newsletter, weekly flame, and much, much more.